On Point, hosted by Peter Van Aartrijk. Conversations with interesting and informative experts on technology, branding, culture, social media marketing, and other great topics.
Hello again, everybody. I'm Peter Van Aartrijk, this is an On Point podcast brought to you by our friends at Insurance Journal. And as part of our continuing series on insurance disruptors and disruption in general, I've asked Tony Westling, who's managing principal at Chromium up in San Francisco, to join us. Good day to you, sir, Tony.
Good day, Peter. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, and as Tony's chatting, folks want to learn more about the company. It's Chromium.group, www.chromium.group. And Tony, you and I had the distinct pleasure of talking with Matt Miller, who is CEO of MBroker up in San Francisco as well. And he he told me that, and you, I'm sure, that that Silicon Valley, the herd, as he called it, of Silicon Valley, is just pouring tons of money into the insurance industry. It's just that it's maybe the one industry, maybe financial services is another, but certainly insurance is the one industry where it kind of got under the radar for decades. Because people thought it was like, I don't know what they think, it's like the government or something. Well, you know, let's not touch it. It's sort of this weird and, you know, entrenched industry, a lot of complexity, et cetera. So let's work on some other stuff like, Uber, for example. Let's replace taxis. And now what's happening is they're saying, oh, we have things like data that we can go and underwrite in 15 seconds an insurance policy for a hardware store, for example. Well, it used to take 3 days, and it might still do for some insurance carriers. And so this is coming, and I think you've said, to coin your phrase, Tony, the future will come fast to insurance. And you draw the parallel with the taxi industry and sure, maybe even with the hotel industry with Airbnb and others. But anyway, it's a long opener. I realize that. But what do you see? Because you're not an insurance guy. I've been hanging around the industry a long time. But what do you see as you're in Silicon Valley, actually? The Chromium office is in Silicon Valley. These are your peeps all around you. You go outside, you run into people who are investing maybe in insurtech.
It's just like the HBO show. They do actually walk around in groups of five, and it's all guys. You're right, Peter, about all those things. And I think that what Silicon Valley tries to do is look at where there appears to be the great floating green head, like Oz, and you know they say, pay no attention to the man behind the curtains. You know, whenever there's sort of opacity and inefficiency and inner workings that people claim are too complex for anything but the most the most skilled, seasoned veterans to handle, and that you need to have this personal relationship with somebody guiding you. Not that that's not true, but what I'm saying is that is what Silicon Valley loves to rail against. You brought up the taxi industry with Uber. They really didn't see that coming. They really didn't. You bring up the hotel industry with Airbnb. Again, the idea of getting into somebody else's car, icky, getting into somebody else's house, icky. Yet, you know, we saw glimmers of these things happening here in the Bay Area and Silicon Valley years ago, where people would have, for instance, these informal carpools where, because the trains were so full of people, anybody who was driving over the bridge would stop in front of the train station, and people they didn't know would get into their car so that they could all ride in the carpool lane and get over the bridge. Well, what is the carpool lane equivalent in the insurance industry? And that is the speed of underwriting, that is the rapid availability and flexibility of coverage. And these sorts of things are things that although I think not easily solved just by data alone, Certainly, there's a lot of data, big data out there, and a lot of computing power that can be used to great effect to really disrupt this industry. And so it is happening.
It sure is. What I find interesting in looking at the 1,100 startups that have received $2.6 billion in funding, total funding, as of 2016, is there's a couple of reactions in the insurance industry. One is sort of, you know, deer in the headlights. I got to ride this sucker out. You know, I got to keep my agent, my agency, my brokerage, my company job, my insurance company job, for another 5-10 years, and you know, just please let me keep my just keep the status quo. Then there's folks who are sort of saying, they're sort of poo-pooing the whole thing, that, you know, it really is just a fad. It's like a dot-com. They're going to flame out. You know, they don't understand our business. This is a relationship business. And then the third category, which I want to spend more research time in 2017 and beyond, those are the minority of folks in the industry who are saying, whoa, this is really happening. It's really coming. Why don't we partner and or invest in some of these insurtechs ourselves? Because if we do that, perhaps we can reinvent some of the stuff we've been doing the same old way for decades. I think those are the ones, and again, I think it's a minority of folks in the industry. Maybe that'll be an increasing minority. But they're looking at this a whole nother way. They see it as not a threat, but as an opportunity. And I think those folks are smart.
Sure. And it really goes back to, what is the culture of your particular organization? Is it one that embraces change? Is it one that has its head in the sand? You know, you talk about people who just say, this will pass, or these guys don't know what they're doing. I think Sony probably said that when Apple entered the music player market with the iPod. And I think that Nokia probably said that when Apple entered the mobile phone market with the iPhone. And the power that a disruptive brand can have is drawn partly from its culture. And I think that this is a question that all insurance companies, from carriers to brokers, have to ask themselves: is their culture able to adapt to this new situation? And is their brand one that could resonate in this space? A very good example is, you mentioned Matt Miller of InBroker. When we had him on our coffee chat program for Chromium, we got a question from one of the audience, and they said, who's going to take this guy seriously? Look, he's got long hair and a beard. He's wearing a wraparound sweater. You know, nobody's going to trust him. And it was kind of telling. It was this idea that here, this one individual, as opposed to the app that he's putting out there, that it's the individual who's going to form that relationship. And I think that this is a really important question, is who's going to form those relationships? People do have relationships with their iPhones. They do have relationships with the apps they use. And so is your culture, not yours, Peter, but the culture of carriers and brokers, is your culture ready for this? Can your culture adapt to it? Can your brand be a brand that people love in the way that they love their iPhones, or maybe in the way that they love Facebook, right? What is your brand going to do? How is your culture going to react?
Yeah, I think that's a great point, Tony. You know, there's certainly elements of the insurance industry that are thinking about this idea of speeding things up, but the one hallmark of the industry, I will say, that's still there, and this is gonna absolutely have to change, is the time it takes to do things, the time it takes to underwrite a policy, the time it takes to pay a claim, the time it takes to get a policy issued. I know the industry has been working on this and the different sectors of the industry for a long time. And in some cases, they've sped up a lot of this. There's for example, apps available for claims and so on. But the one thing I've seen these insurtechs really focus on is convenience, getting things done over their phone, certainly online generally, processes that used to take a long time. I think that's one of the big common elements I see in all of these insurtech startups. It's simply saving sure. people time.
Right. They're taking the view that what is the question that the customer is asking when they scratch their head? One of those questions is, as you say, why is this taking so long? Why should it? Why can't I get this claim resolved? I have the photos. Here's the police report. Whatever. Or why can't I get this coverage? I have this, customer who's not going to take us on as a vendor unless we have this writ. Why is this taking so long? So these things, speed is one of the factors. I think cost is another. I'm certain that a lot of people, spend some time with their broker and they think, what does this guy actually do for me? And why, what percentage of my premium is going to pay this guy? And I don't see that he really, he's jovial. He's nice enough. He takes me out, for lunch once a year. But what's he really doing for me? What value is the broker adding? I know that there are a lot of brokers who do add value, especially those who deal in specialty areas. Their knowledge and their expertise is valuable. But I think, in general, people wonder, what is this guy doing for me? So it's cost, right? It's the time it takes. It's the cost. They're wondering, why is it that I pay for insurance, and then I only get to use it, once every 20 years, and I feel like I've been gypped. Certainly people within the industry know that, you have to have a large enough pool to spread the risk, and you have to have the capital to manage any claims. But I think that from the consumer's side, you look at the questions that they're asking, and I think that InsurTech is trying to answer those questions in a different way than traditional carriers and brokers have, at least in the past. I'm sure that some of them are changing.
And I think we talked about speed and cost, and I think a third element which to me is more threatening to insurance carriers, the folks that hold the paper, if you will, the policy, than it might be to agents and brokers and others who are interacting with the customers. And that is, I just call it community, but it might be more into the area of culture that you already brought up, Tony. I feel like these startups are almost talking about the insurance customer in a new way. They're saying, we're not the insurance industry has been a distant, faceless, and personal industry for a long time, which is why no one really likes them. Now, I don't think that's fair at all. Actually, I know a lot of insurance people personally, and it's not that way, but that's the customer perception. And so let's change the industry. So you look at their brand identities, Tony. It's sort of disarming. They do look like Uber startups. They do look like they're oversimplifying things, don't they, with their branding and talking about peer to peer, which is really not a new concept at all. It's been around a long time, going back to the days in the 1980s of risk retention groups and risk purchasing groups. Like-minded policyholders getting together as people sure. or as businesses and insuring things. So they have this sense
that's
of
what
community.
That's what the mutual system is all about, right? That
exactly.
People
yeah.
in rural areas getting together and essentially self-insuring. And
right.
and when you've got anybody with an iPhone essentially being part of part of a decentralized but still a very distinct group. Why not? Mm-hmm. Why not sell insurance with every iPhone? Right? It's not really an outlandish idea to imagine that. Again, certainly nobody could have said that the taxi industry would have been devastated the way it was by Uber. And you look at other disruptors, and you really can't see it coming until it's here, and then suddenly you say, oh yeah, I guess we should have seen that coming. Well, I think the insurance industry now sees it coming. The question is, who's going to survive, right? It's the people who are using data. It's being able to mine big data. It's being able to use technology, mobile technology especially, and it's being able to think in a new way. You have companies like Metromile, who insure by the miles you drive, right? So that might be a really great solution for somebody who doesn't drive very often. These new ideas, I think they're in there. It is just hard when you've got, I don't want to call it a moral hazard, but there's a disincentive to change, right? Why would you, if you were a broker, why wouldn't you want to have a book of business that just renews every year? you surely mm-hmm. would, right? But that may not be a luxury that people can enjoy forever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So on this idea of community, I think if you look at what Progressive actually has done a good job of this in my estimation with their pricing tool, which they've had for years, which says, hey, you don't have to be with Progressive to get a price on what your insurance might be. Maybe State Farm will be lower score, lower price. I was going to say Discover has their free credit score available to anybody, whether they're have a Discover card or not. I watch my kids who are millennials and how they interact with banking. It's all online. They don't go to banks anymore, but they talk about these things that their banks do that just make it easier for them, and they do feel like they're kind of part of this saving club, And so here, the challenge for the traditional insurance carriers is they don't really have, I don't see that sense of community. I think it's more of just a, hey, this is a service. You got to get car insurance, so we're your provider. And I think the millennial generation, which absolutely these new startups have to appeal to, let's face it, right? I mean, they're the 93 million of them. They're the future. They have this sense of community. And I think the traditional brands really struggle with that, like that whole culture of community.
Yes, I think you're right. And we spoke with David McGrain, who's in the brand area for AAA here in Northern California. And this is something that he talked about that they're trying to do. And that is, how do you go from being just the sticker on the back of the car and the card that somebody carries in their wallet to being part of somebody's, the story that people are writing about their lives? So this is what they say, that millennials are looking for self-actualization, affirmation in everything they do. And that includes, it will essentially eventually include how they manage risk, how they cover losses. And so which brands are doing a really good job of appealing to millennials? Well, if you look at advertising alone, you would say Progressive, Farmers, Geico, but these are big brands with big budgets to spend on big splashy ad campaigns. What about more everyday brands? Are they making it so that people, feel like they're part of a club? A lot of these smaller mutuals, how can you work to make it feel like you're part of a credit union as opposed to, being just somebody who's got their deposits at a big bank? and what does that get you? You know, maybe you don't want to go on picnics with all your other fellow insurers, but maybe you do, right? Maybe you do. You want to go on hikes or trips or something like this. What is it that insurance can offer to be part of the story that these people are writing every day about their lives? Because that's what they do. They choose brands based on how relevant they are to their story. And is State Farm as relevant to me as Embroker? You know, I know they're two slightly different things, but I'm, you know, looking at brands. Well, you know, I might say I'm a Silicon Valley kind of guy. I think I want to try out this new thing. So I'm going to get Metromile. I'm going to get Embroker to give me my business insurance. You know, and so it's about, it's not about coverage, right? Is it really about coverage? It might be for people who are prudent and actually spend the time thinking about this. And what we're talking about there are, you know, the greatest generation and the boomers, right? Who actually sat down, read the policies. You know, I don't know that that's necessarily going to be the pervading attitude in the millennial generation. These are people who are looking for something to be a part of. And how can insurance companies, through technology, become a part of these people's lives? It's an interesting challenge, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sure is. I think it would, as I mentioned earlier, just to put a bow on this a little bit, one of the loudest and maybe more brash startups, Lemonade. Most of our listeners probably have heard something about Lemonade. 87% of their customers are first-time policies. That's a tracking number, a statistic I saw early in 2017, Tony. So you look at that and say, all right, so they're first-time policyholders. First-time policyholders. Who are these people? Well, they're certainly not baby boomers. I mean, baby boomers have had, you know, by law or just prudence, have had coverages for different things for years. Millennials, not so much, because they've delayed, you know, they've delayed buying houses, they've delayed buying, you know, buying cars, et cetera. So they're delaying families. I mean, they're going to come into the economy in a big, big way. But here you are, 87% are first-time policyholders, so they're younger people. So does the status quo thinking in the insurance industry mean that they will lose an entire generation of buyers? I hope not. I think they're smarter than that. I think they're going to not everybody's going to be saved. I think there's going to be a lot of mergers and acquisitions, Tony, up and down the food chain in the insurance industry. But hopefully we'll have a more significant minority of folks in the industry who are looking at this and saying, we're going to innovate. You know, our culture does say we need to innovate. We need to go out and learn more about these insurtech folks, not try to do everything ourselves here in the company.
Sure. I mean, if just as a quick wrap up, if anybody who's listening hasn't gone in to seen Lemonade's site or read their blog, they should. Because what do they lead with? They lead with 20% for nonprofits in the last 100 days. They say we take a 20% fee, we pay our claims, and that takes another 20%, and then there's about 40% left over that we give back to social causes. I mean, this is what they lead with. They don't talk about the coverage. They don't talk about the underwriting. They don't talk about how safe and secure you are. So it's a different paradigm. It's a huge shift, and you're right. There are going to be a lot of activity in this space as these insurtechs, are they the ones who are going to be doing the buying, or are they the ones who are going to be acquired or merged with more traditional carriers and brokers? That's a good question, but I think that one thing that's guaranteed, and that is that change will come.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, Tony. Thanks for your time. If folks want to get in touch with Tony, he's at T Wessling, TWESSLING, at chromiumbranding.com or at chromium.group, I believe. Is that right, Tony?
Yeah. And you can follow me on Twitter at Twessling.
Twessling.
At Twessling, T-W-E-S-S-L-I-N-G. I write about brand and culture on Twitter.
That's cool. All right, Tony. Well, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Peter.
This has been On Point with Peter Van Aartrijk, a podcast presentation of Wells Media Group.